presented here for your consideration the notion that the ordinary people surrounding you every day, on the street, the bus, at the post office, or the trendy evening venue, are, in fact, far from ordinary. That these men, women, and others form their own splinter groups behind closed doors, and that these micro-societies engage in activities often more obscure than fiction. Welcome to the Subculture.
Yes, hello, and thank you for joining us on the Subculture podcast. I'm your host, and basically just a water balloon with a face drawn on it, Andrew, joined by my esteemed and educated friend here.
I'm Joe, former deputy assistant fluffer to Michael Jackson.
I don't even know what to do with that, other than enjoy it, which I'm sure you did not.
Listen, the pay was terrible, but the benefits were terrible.
Well, at least you've got that. At least you've got the memories. So today, we're covering the topic of arm wrestling. And we're talking like competitive, not just what you might do in a bar with your friends, right? Or professional and competitive arm wrestling.
I think all forms of arm wrestling, because I didn't know initially that you could even do it professionally. I thought it was something that just happened in bars.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's bomb drop number one. It happens at a competitive and professional level. Mind's blown already.
That's what you come here for. Hard-hitting journalism.
Journalism. I can feel the hit of quotes as you said that.
That's what this is. So, Andrew, my dear colleague, what were your preconceptions of arm wrestling before you looked into it at all?
Okay, so going into it, you said arm wrestling, because you, let's be honest about it, you brought this topic up. You've done this to us.
I've done this to us, yeah.
It was good, though. So I was just picturing, and I probably didn't know that you could do it professionally. I mean, I guess we'll find out a bit more, but I just pictured a bunch of guys with jacked up arms, and it's probably hyper-masculine bro culture and something that maybe people did for likes and clicks on the internet. And I was like, I don't know how, if this was a competition, how would you even judge it? Like, are there rules? Do you do best 2 out of 3, or is it just like, bam, you're done? And we're saying subculture here, but it's basically just a sport now, right?
Possibly. I was wondering what, we should probably come up with a definition of subculture at some point, but arm wrestling has its own language. It's got its own memes. It has its own, I think it counts as a subculture. Yes, it's a sport, but it's also, it's definitely a fringe sport.
Oh, certainly.
I don't almost say underground at some points, but it hasn't made it into the mainstream really. And I think it's going to stay that way for quite a while. So I'd say it counts as a subculture.
Okay. So on an initial Google search, and it credits top end sports, and it says it's a legitimate sport since the 50s. And there was even a Sylvester Stallone movie about it called Over the Top in 1987, mm-hmm. which I'm told was a massive flop. But I would say that means it kind of is in the popular culture. Like the idea of it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And now maybe the depth that it goes to is what gives it a kind of subculture definition, if there is one. Should we ever write one?
I'd agree with that. I think everyone over the age of 5 is aware of arm wrestling in some form or other. But I don't think many people are aware that there's a competitive scene out there. I suppose it stands to reason if you think about it. Humans will compete over literally anything.
Bro culture, jacked up dudes, it's all about strength and power would be what I first thought. But a bit of reading maybe says otherwise, but you probably know a bit more than I do, a lot more than I do. Everyone knows more than I do about everything, but that's the starting point.
You were meant to research it. You should be up on it over the average man.
I mean, I know a little bit. And if you want a funny explanation or a super casual one, there's that guy who does YouTube videos called Casually Explained. Mm-hmm. And he's got, I like his phrasing that he would watch it or had been aware of it on YouTube for a while because it has the highest genetic anomalies to normal population ratios.
that's definitely true. Yeah, there's quite a few. I say this with kindness and admiration, freaks. Definitely gravitate towards it if you happen to be that way aligned. I think my preconceptions for this, because I suggested this because I discovered this over COVID on YouTube. I think it had a bit of a blow up on YouTube particularly around COVID, maybe people were searching or people producing more content for it. But that's when I discovered arm wrestling as a professional, or like a more than just random bums in a alleyway scrapping it out. And it was quite fascinating, really. But before that, I never really, I mean, there's a couple of arm wrestling things at school, as in literally just someone challenged someone else. And I don't think there were really rules or anything like that. It was pretty obvious who had won. And my only other brush with it was when I used to work as a climbing instructor. One of the guys there was incredibly strong. He was only about 5'5", but he was also about 5'5" wide. And he was just incredibly powerfully built. He's not suitable to be a climber at all. They tend to be long and lanky and wiry. And this guy was stocky as hell and just fought his way up climbs. He climbed way harder than me just by being an absolute powerhouse. And in the bar one evening, arm wrestling came up as a topic. And he said, oh yeah, I used to do this. And tell you what, anyone that wants to arm wrestle me, you can. If you can move my arm, you win. And I was like, all right, prepare to lose. And nobody moved his arm. And I was just kind of blown away how the difference, because there are a lot of very strong climbers there, but no one could shift him at all.
Not even move his arm.
No, it was unbelievable. Yeah, I should have asked him more about it, but I was just kind of like, wow, this guy must have done this a lot. And then it kind of disappeared from my consciousness for the next 15 years.
Okay. So I think you're right. Yeah, there's a schoolboy aspect in culture that you will have got into an arm wrestle with someone at some point, but it's just two young guys with their arms on the table. And apparently, according to some YouTube videos, the fastest way to get your arm broken is to do it wrong.
I think you can get your arm broken doing it right.
Yeah, well,
as well.
Yeah. I mean, if I ever want a day off work, I don't think I'll go to those extremes, but the fastest way. But you're absolutely right from what I read, especially this article in stuff.co.nz. So you know it's legit when it's an online newspaper. I don't know why I'm disparaging them. I'll go after anyone for no reason. Yeah, they were saying in this article that there was definitely a YouTube-driven boom. And as you said, the global pandemic helped drive that. I guess maybe with more people indoors, you will end up finding more fringe stuff. And they, not them, someone else, kind of tied it into the rise in professional bodybuilding and people being more interested in gym culture as well. The two kind of cross over when you've got these algorithms of people with massively disproportionate bodies, I guess.
I think that's really been the case, hasn't it? There's, in the 90s, everyone was about being skinny. I don't know what happened since then, but now it seems like everyone's all about being buff. Men and women and social media, I think it lends itself. Social media has fueled this, I'm sure, because the most impressive looking bodies get the most attention. People want to be like it. I mean, maybe that was always true, but I think it was less organic and algorithm fed previously through traditional media. People were like, wow, look at that person, they're really jacked, and then you wouldn't see anymore because most people are normal. But social media funnels these amazing athletes / freaks / roid heads.
There, well, that's a good point we'll come into in a bit. But some of the videos I was saying is that we're kind of in a golden age of arm wrestling because there's this big drive in the availability of it online. So the boom of it being available on YouTube and the fact that sports in general are now a lot more monetized and televised because you don't have to get your, like, a single network. You don't have to go to ESPN in America, or you don't have to go to the BBC to get something in front of people. You can just stick it online and advertise it a bit less than you would have maybe had to before, which is why we've got stuff like esports and darts being as big as they are, like televised competition for darts. Fuck,
it's a real shame
that
darts is still going. Darts might be the worst sport there is.
This could be another,
I hesitate to call it sport, it's more of a drinking accessory, really.
Well, then that's why they've all got a pint in their hand even at a pro level, right?
I also kind of love that about it, though.
So it's maybe a what similar athletes? Barroom culture that's become a sport.
Yeah, so I think it is a bar. Is there even a tournament called Barstool Sports or something that did arm wrestling tournaments?
Maybe.
It definitely has roots in bars. I've even arm wrestled in a bar relatively recently. Well, I suppose it was a pub.
But I think that's why people would have thought of it or go, yeah, that's what drunken idiots do. But no, it's a legitimate sport.
This was quite funny, actually. because I was just sitting at the pub with some friends, and this woman came over and said, "Which of you is the best at arm wrestling?" So, wanting to make my friends feel pathetic and small, I immediately said, "Me." And she was like, "Right, come with me. I need you to beat this guy arm wrestling so that I can have his seat," or something like that. And as I was walking over, I was beginning to wonder what I'd let myself in for. And I see who I'm arm wrestling, and it's this like 6'5" black bloke. And we shake hands, and my hand just disappears inside his meaty paw. And I think, oh God, I fucked this terribly. What a stupid idea. And yeah, he folded me up like a lawn chair.
Went from Joe, the confident white guy, to yeah. Joe, the human pretzel, 0.2 seconds. Yes.
No, he was a real gent, actually. Had two cracks at it. I didn't disgrace myself. I definitely put up a fight, but he was strong as hell. He was huge as well. He bought me a drink afterwards, I think by way of, I don't know, completing the humiliation or something. Oh, he was a nice guy.
So the pro arm wrestling YouTube channels and videos and comments that I saw were saying that, contrary to my initial belief going in, it's not this really bro-y hostile culture. It's got a lot of camaraderie, maybe because it's a small and growing sport. Especially this New Zealand-based article was like, they're a culture, they're a community, they will arm wrestle in each other's garages because that's where they've set up their clubs. But as soon as it's done, everyone's friends, it's like, you know, it's a hug and a handshake afterwards, and it's quite normal. Like, all your aggression goes into the table, is what they were saying, kind of thing.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a good respect culture, mostly. We'll talk about that a bit later as well. But I think we've got far enough into this now that we should probably define what actually is arm wrestling. Are there rules? You know, how do you do it? How do you win?
Yeah, hit me with the deets. Now, I know that there are special tables for it as well, but you've got a lot more stuff on.
Okay, I need to caveat this. I'm not an expert. I'm a small-time arm wrestling enthusiast on YouTube, and plus the research I've done. So as far as I can tell, you would have a table which is bolted to the ground, and you've got a handle on each side where you can hold with one hand and you arm wrestle with the other one. And they generally compete on either the right or the left. Some people compete on both. There are separate tournament brackets for each one. And there's probably various details about how you would grip up in the first instance, because there's quite a lot in it. Even from the gripping up stage, you can get a bad grip or a good grip. And they're always fighting each other to get a decent grip even before the match actually technically begins. And then once it begins, you win by pushing your opponent's wrist to touching the foam pad on the opposite side. And they win by getting your hand to touch that. So quite a lot of matches, there'll be a struggle a couple of inches off the pad of someone desperately trying to not have their arm touch it, and the other person desperately trying to push it down. So I think in a nutshell, that's it. Some people believe that, I think in the school scene, that you're not allowed to have your other hand holding the table, but you definitely can, because they have the handle on the arm wrestling tables.
Yep.
And yeah, then you go from there. And you can use your entire body in it as well.
It did seem that way from the clips that I saw. It's not just two guys at a flat table who can slam the other one's hand into a bare piece of wood the hardest. As you said, you've got these pegs to hold onto with your non-wrestling hand. They rest their arms on a specific pad on the table, so your elbow's not, again, rubbing on a hard piece of wood.
And your elbow has to stay on the pad. If it comes off, that's an elbow foul, which can lose you the match.
And then your hand/wrist has to touch this contact pad, which is quite close to the gripping peg that your other hand holds to. So it is kind of padded and slightly safer. I'm not saying you couldn't damage someone. There's a lot of damaging being done.
I think the damage doesn't come from impacting the pad. I think it comes in the massive amount of force you're applying through your arm in an unnatural way, directly opposed to another bloke that's doing the same thing.
A lot of tendon strain and stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So, and the clips I saw, as you said, they can use their whole body weight. They can kind of almost get their shoulders in behind it, and their feet, only one foot like has to stay on the floor. It seemed like they could almost jump around to get some leverage.
Yeah, you see people wrapping their legs around the table and things like that, trying to get any little extra bit of purchase. I'm not sure exactly what the rule is. Maybe it is one leg has to stay on the floor. I don't know.
But you're definitely, your other hand can't leave that peg as well. He has to stay holding on to the
yes I think grip. So yeah,
Cool. And some of the bits that I saw, as you said, there are celebrities, there are guys that are really big in the arm wrestling game. And there was this, it was one of the Devons or something like that. You would know more of the actual names of these guys, was giving like a little masterclass to this up and coming young guy. And it did seem there was a lot went into it before you even grabbed the guy's hand. It was like, you want to make him come to you. Don't let him pull you off center of the middle of the table. Keep your arm
closer to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All these kind of things, like how to get leverage. Get him to grab your thumb first, because then it gives you a better grip to go over the top. All this kind of stuff. But there's various ways that they would win these matches, right? Mm-hmm. A couple of different techniques.
And they can switch between them depending what their opponent's good at. Yeah, this would have probably been Devon the Rat, who's, I think, the world number two at the moment. He's certainly been the number one in recent times. This is something I love about arm wrestling, is there's so much more to it than you would think initially. You think, right, you just got to be strong and bam, and you'll win. And there's so much more depth and technique to it than you'd, and obviously raw strength, but so much more than I would have initially thought. Even before the match begins, and how you grip up and how you bring your opponent to you and what you can get away with. This is a part of their culture as well, it seems. There seems to be, it's a duty of the ref to stop you from taking the piss, and it's kind of on you to take the piss in your advantage as much as you can. You know, pulling your opponent towards you to get a better grip and this kind of stuff. And if the ref doesn't stop it and your opponent doesn't stop it, then, well, too bad.
But pulling them towards you is par for the course. That's a technique, right?
Yes, but once you start. I think in the setup, there's more to the setup. Sometimes these matches, there'll be 3 or 4 minutes of setup of them finagling around and saying, oh, you can't do that, you know, and start again, or they start pulling too early. And usually the setup takes longer than the match.
If they don't get a good grip as well, I saw one of them doesn't grip properly, then they end up getting both their hands wrapped in tape. So it's like, if you can't play nicely, boys, we're going to strap you together.
The strap's an interesting one as well, because I think it takes some of the gripping each other element out of it. And some people want to be in the straps and some people don't. So sometimes they will, I think they call it slipping. The people that would prefer to be in the straps for some reason or other, they will deliberately kind of let go of the other person's hand, especially if they're losing, and try and slide out of it like that, because then they'll have to do a rematch and strap them up. So you sometimes see people holding on to their opponent's remaining thumb, just like pulling the thumb down, trying to get the win before they can slip away.
I see. And some of this article was also saying that, a bit like you said, there's more to it than just pure raw power. And I liked it. They said, oh, a few intellectual people come in and attack the mental side of it. It's like, nope, come on.
There are many things. I would never call an arm wrestler an intellectual.
It's just not, it's an abuse of the term, maybe. Yeah, maybe there's some strategy, but it's not like Professor Seamus McDougall of the Highland University for extended scientific studies of horses is going to crack this with just his mind, and in his first game he's going to come and floor some giant because he's worked out the perfect algorithm.
Because he's done the calculus.
On horses.
Nerd. Yeah, no. I mean, I say that they're not intellectuals. I don't mean that as an insult. There's plenty of smart, strategic people in it, but yeah, intellectual is not the right word for this.
Strategic probably is, though. Yeah,
There's a lot of strategy to it sometimes.
So they, after googling just what it was and seeing when it kind of kicked off in an official capacity, let's say, I saw that there's a World Arm Wrestling Federation, the WAF, which was founded in 1977, and there's a whole bunch of these smaller leagues in different countries. That seems to be the biggest,
yeah,
most
loads.
Prominent one.
And there's WAL, World Arm Wrestling League. There's the East versus West tournament. There's Arm Wars. There's the Arnold Classic. I think Arnold Classic is just general a strength sports show, which has several events at it, some of which is arm wrestling. But yeah, there's a ton of these things.
So Arnold, I'm guessing, that's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he does,
yeah,
every now and then,
father,
adjudicate a match. Like, he does ref matches sometimes.
Does he? I don't think so.
Some of the big exhibition ones.
Yeah. Really? That's fun.
They're probably just for show, though, right?
Arnie is the godfather of anything that involves a muscle, really. As the chief man.
You've got an unhealthy love for Arnold Schwarzenegger.
There's nothing unhealthy about it.
Hmm.
He's a great man.
Some of those self-drawn artworks of you and him, I think, are fairly unhealthy.
ChatGPT's begging for its life these days. Please, not another one.
So
that's illegal.
You mentioned WAL, the World Arm Wrestling League, which I did come across as well, claiming to be the largest and fastest growing league in the world. And then I saw, based in Chicago, small caveat there. They didn't really seem that it had been that active recently, but it had a fairly well put together website. And I was like, okay, I'm going to flick through this and just meet the competition section, which didn't do much to allay my initial judgments of it just being massive, burly guys all in the same black t-shirt in various tough guy poses, either screaming at the camera or flexing and all this kind of thing.
Yep.
What I particularly enjoyed about scrolling through that, though, was it had their, some of them had jobs underneath their names. You could see what the jobs were of these guys. And why am I doing this? What am I making fun of people that could crush my head in between their bicep and
in one hand
forearm with no more effort than we would squeeze a pea? Probably. I'm going to carry on anyway. But so a lot of these jobs were exactly what you'd expect, like mechanic, builder, contractor. I saw lumberjack on there.
Truck driver.
These are careers that you would picture someone in fairly good shape who would need bigger muscles for doing some of that job. And then I got down to chemistry teacher.
Yeah, I saw him.
Restaurant manager.
The professor.
I was like, restaurant manager? Do you mean bouncer, mate?
Well, that's something else I like about this, is I think it has working class roots. And top athletes, because it's not like a tennis or something where you, at above a certain level, you can make enough money from this to do it regularly. Maybe the top guys make enough money to be full-time arm wrestlers, but I think most of them just do it for the joy of it, and they need real jobs to fund this hobby of theirs. And, you know, they're salt of the earth jobs by and large.
Real jobs, like self-employed. That was on there. I was like, yep, that scans.
Maybe not the self-employed bloke. Who knows what he does.
UPS worker.
It's just good furniture mover. Good, honest stuff.
I would be afraid to turn down anything that he brought over, you know. Here's your package. It's just mangled, crushed.
Carrying a 3-seater sofa under one arm.
I also enjoyed practice nurse. Like, please don't be the one that gives me a sponge bath / anything like that. I don't think practice nurses actually give you a sponge bath, but don't.
Whatever it was, you wouldn't have much choice in it.
That's true. I really, really hope that you're not doing my prostate exam.
So the greatest of all time, John Brzenk, which is a fairly surprisingly uncontentious statement, I think. He was an aircraft mechanic.
Again, working with your hands. I'm guessing aircraft parts are not unheavy, am I?
But I think he was an arm wrestler, a successful arm wrestler, before he became an aircraft mechanic.
Interesting. Did you come across a guy called Alan Fisher?
Yes.
Because I saw him on this list as well, and it was him and someone else, like literally two guys who looked like the average build of a human, like a weedier version of us, because we're obviously titans ourselves. No one can see these cameras. They can't deny that. But they have one...
Depends if you count doughiness as...
Titanic doughiness. But they had one arm gigantically larger than the other one.
Really? like Morty in that episode.
Exactly like that. That Rick and Morty episode where he gets some serial killer's DNA injected into one arm. That's what those guys legitimately look like.
Calls him Armathy.
That's the one.
Yeah, I imagine Alan Fisher was, I think he was on the right hand. So most of them only pick one hand to compete on. And a select few will do either.
I'm going to guess that that's possibly not their masturbating arm, because they'll just rip that thing right off. Unless that's how they... that's the initial strength training. So how did you get into arm wrestling? Oh, well, I was a serial masturbator before this, so I already had the build.
The Glenn Quagmire build.
The article was also saying it's the highest intensity sport in the world, where you go from 0 to 100 in a second. So I guess that's after all the setup.
Yeah, after all the setup. I think a very common strategy, I think they call it the hit, is just going as hard as you can the moment the ref says go, to try and overwhelm your opponent. Because if you can finish a match in half a second, you save energy for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people can put out ridiculous energy for that half a second. But would struggle more in a longer battle. So there's a bit of a strength versus endurance as well, which is interesting. So Devon Lerat, who's obviously crazy strong too, but he was most known throughout his career so far. I think his nickname was the Vampire on occasion for his amazing endurance. And so people might be able to beat him in pure strength right off the bat. But in these super matches they do, there's multiple rounds, like best of five or something like that. But his opponents will get tired, and he wants to end up in a battle where it's not over and it's ongoing. People are pouring their energy into it because his endurance is so good that as long as he survives the initial hit, then he will usually just beat them on endurance, which is one of the ways he's been so great, as far as I can tell, is his endurance is unmatched.
This is the guy that is really, like, his weight would fluctuate hugely so that he could move between categories, and also when he had to scale up to do some of these super matches. Is that the guy? Like, at some point they called him Pancake Devon when he was putting on loads of weight.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Okay.
Ex-Canadian Special Forces. I think he's about 6'5" and between 110 and 130 kilos. I think he's competed even less than that.
You liked him for his smack talk as well, you said. Like, he was big into psyching out his opponent.
I think that's part of it as well in arm wrestling, as well as trying to take every advantage the ref will give you. I get the feeling that smack talk is part of the game as well, because he likes getting in people's heads, talking trash to them, and it's quite effective sometimes. I don't know if you ever saw Devon Lerat versus Matt Mask. Poor Matt just had a complete fucking meltdown because he couldn't handle the smack talk, and he just went to pieces. I think Devon would have beaten him anyway, but yeah, this is one of the other things that makes Devon so good at the sport, I think. But also, he's really entertaining to watch. Single-handedly, I think he has brought many, many viewers into it, just because he's just so watchable with the trash talk and the showmanship and all this kind of stuff. It does cross into, like, disrespectful assholery sometimes. It's hard to tell how much of that is deliberate to play up to the hype and get people interested, and how much is genuine. I suspect it's actually mostly calculated, because he does generally seem like a nice dude.
That's probably all part of the show, right? Because it is, in a sense, it is a show as well, now that it's more widely known, or it's becoming televised or published on YouTube. It's about drawing viewers in. So if you've got a charismatic, maybe not even charismatic, if you've just got someone that will clown around or will get people to watch it because they've got such a mm-hmm. character, then you can play up to that, maybe.
Oh, Devon definitely qualifies for that. And I know it's important to him to grow the sport, and I think he's found an effective way to do it here. It makes good YouTube fodder.
Mm-hmm. Where was I reading? I can't remember. Possibly that same article, but they were saying that YouTube is probably the gateway drug for many arm wrestlers, because they will see it and think, oh, I've got a giant forearm from repetitive wanking. I can get into this. No problem.
It would have happened to me. I found it on YouTube, and I keep thinking, this would be fun. I'd like to do this just to, you know, beat people in pubs, if nothing else. I think it's a cool thing to be good at. But of all the sports injuries I've had, they've all been tendon or ligament related. I don't know if I've got defective tendons or ligaments, or maybe my muscles are just so strong, but this does not sound like the sport for me. I'm sure I'll snap some shit. Do you think you might do it?
Nope.
On the left hand, and 105 kilograms, Andrew Buchanan. You don't want to hear that?
I'm probably going to cut it out so I never have to hear that again. I'm not a competitive person, and this did not appeal to me in any way. I am not bothered.
Fair enough. I'm definitely tempted. Maybe not by the relentless roiding. I think I could become a lot better at arm wrestling than I am now without having to do that. But I am just scared for my tendons. I don't have a good history. I've broken my Achilles. I've pulled my left pec off my humerus. I've popped 3 pulley ligaments in my hands from climbing. I've never broken a bone, but I've snapped a lot of shit. So begrudgingly, I am not going to look into this any further, much as I want to, because I think it's cool. I'm going to bow out on this one.
They did say that wrestlers basically accept bouts of tendonitis are always sore, more or less. And some of them, because they've been training so much and doing it so much, they just can't really straighten out their arms anymore. Their arms are always slightly bent.
You see them wandering around like this.
Their tendons are like clenched up from the sort of pressure that they put on them. And the key action was from wrist strength. Surprisingly, it's not just about having giant biceps and stuff.
No, it's the forearm probably more than anything else. Do you know some of these super heavyweights? They've got 20-inch forearms. What? That's absurd. My quads aren't much bigger than that.
Some of these massive guys, they are definitely grotesquely proportioned when you compare them to a normal human. It's like, the width of my neck is what their forearm is, or something like that. Yeah.
They're monsters. So definitely at the top level, there's weight categories, obviously, and the super heavyweights tend to get most of the attention, but there's, you know, lightweight, medium weight, heavyweight. We'd be heavyweights, interestingly, which I think is, we might even be super heavyweights. 85
I told
kilos
you about
plus.
My weight gain in confidence. You didn't have to come and rub it in my face. By the way, you're a super heavyweight now.
Did you know that you'd be facing the best in the world if you'd wanted to compete, you fat fuck?
That's the only way I would compete anyway. I have to go against the best in the world.
Get folded up like a lawn chair as well.
All I have to do is do slightly well against one of them, and I'm immediately better than 90% of everyone else.
Yeah. I think this is one of those things that people that practice have an overwhelmingly disproportionate advantage against people that don't, because it uses weird muscles and there's a lot of technique. So what I mean by that is someone that looks a bit weedy that actually practices arm wrestling has a very good chance of beating someone that's conventionally strong at it, because the strong blokes doesn't have practice in the right muscles and the technique and all that. So there's a lot more to it that gives an advantage, I think.
Yeah, if he doesn't know that he needs to try and get his wrist or his hand turned on top, and then he can push with his shoulders or some of this other stuff.
Exactly, all this kind of stuff. Like that wrist control, that they're always trying to break the other, well, say break the wrist, but like snap the wrist over and have that on the inside like this, because like this, they're in trouble. So this isn't very helpful for an audio-based podcast. Just imagine me flopping my wrist backwards and forwards. One of them's good, the one on the inside, and on the outside is bad. You don't want that.
I'm seeing a lot of wrist flopping action that back in the 90s we would have mercilessly shamed you for, but no, you're right.
Limp-wristed shit.
So, but it's from the wrist strength, and they're trying to get pronation. Is that how you pronounce
That's the words. Yeah.
Get your wrist in an over-the-top manner from the other person. So you want your wrist to be 90 degrees towards the inside of your forearm, and the other person's would therefore be bent back, and therefore they've got a lot less leverage and can't push upwards as hard.
That's correct.
And as you said, this is kind of a modern organized competition. Someone was saying that the sort of modern format of it stems from California in the 50s and 60s, and it started out being called the World Wrist Wrestling Championship.
And it used to be done sitting down as well.
I would
it's evolved
have thought,
a bit.
Yeah. If we would have done it in school, I think usually we would have been sitting down.
I think it was formalized in the US in the 50s, officially founded league in the 50s. But it's been around in some form or other long before then. Probably since the dawn of arms, since we first evolved arms.
The dawn of men wanting to prove they're stronger than other men.
Yeah, exactly. So from the beginning, there's some people say that there's evidence of it in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs, but I looked at those and I didn't think, it just looked like they were high-fiving each other. It didn't look like an arm wrestle to me. And there's documented, much more convincing documentation and statues from 18th century Japan. So it seemed popular there as well. In fact, the theory of how it even got to the US was sailors that visited Japan picked it up there and came back over to the North American continent and brought it with them. You could see why that would appeal to sailor types as well.
I could see that they would be. If I had to imagine, I would think burly sailor types would be the ideal breeding ground for this.
Yes, definitely. Hauling on ropes all day.
Yeah. Forearm strength, quite important as well.
Filling out nets and things, definitely.
Okay, so it's kind of an organized, there are leagues and championships and competitions now. What did you find out, or what did you want to talk about, I guess, in terms of natural versus unnatural competitors in these competitions? Because that seemed to come up quite a few times when I was looking at it, especially if you want to go and look at a YouTuber called Arm Wrestling Academia, This is a guy that does arm wrestle himself, but he's got quite a few interesting videos, stats, and quite well-researched stuff about things like doping and corruption inside the leagues of these things. And he starts off, or one of the ones that I watched started off making a very good point, which is why I said about the age the competition is. And so being a fairly new sport, he doesn't think that there's ever really been a time in its current inception that anabolic steroids haven't been available. Like if we look at Olympic sports and track and field events, organized meetups of these would go back quite a long time. Now, anabolic steroids were developed in the late 40s in Germany, as far as he mentioned. So there's never been a time where the competition was had like a doping-free history or it wasn't available. Do you know if that makes sense?
Yeah. And you can see from the top guys, they are fucking pumped full of it. So Levan, who's the current number one, Levan Saganashvili, I'm probably mangling that pronunciation, but he's this Georgian guy. Georgians love their strength sports. By the way, I don't know if you've ever come across that, but they fucking love it. Anyway, this guy, Levan, is on top at the moment. And not that many years ago, he was relatively unknown in the arm wrestling scene and was in the kind of 85 kilo category. He put on 82 kilos, was it? 86 kilos in less than 3 years. And that's just not possible.
It's just without being his weight.
Fucking pumped full of this shit. It's literally just impossible. Genetic freak or not, there's no way that you can add 86 kilos of mostly muscle in 3 years. It's madness. He's somewhere between 166 and 190 kilos now, depending on his... I mean, that's madness.
This guy was saying, and it's... You've mentioned it as well, the fact that he's from Georgia. There's like the countries that you wouldn't see competing in other sports apart from strength sports have quite a predominant placing in the top tier competitions, especially the bigger guys. So that's your like Romania, he mentioned.
Ukraine, Russia.
Kazakhstan as well.
Yeah, they all love that stuff.
And he drew a parallel between the fact that it's so prevalent in countries east of Europe, a lot of former Soviet countries, and just the how easy or how prevalent doping is in those countries in other sports as well, which you can see in the kind of history of their Olympic records of disqualifications and stuff. But we see that time and time again, and in any sports, just about when Russians are competing, if they're not getting kicked out for horrendous crimes, it's a lot of doping, and it's gymnasts, it's been ice hockey players, weightlifters. Now, there was that McLaren report a few years ago in the weightlifting scene, and it was just like damningly confirmed how prevalent it was, and even the doping standards would kind of conceal their results. So,
yeah, very, very accessible out there. But arm wrestling's not a formalized league. It's not something like the Olympics where they've got anti-doping rules. It's just a free-for-all. I think because it's been this underground sport for so long that there aren't really any guidelines around. Yeah, there's certainly no drug testing. So if you want to compete at the top level, I think you just won't get a look in unless you're doped up to the eyeballs.
Well, the WAF do allegedly have their own anti-doping codes of conduct and certificates and how they do their testing. And the Turkish guy who was responding to some of these on forums, one of the former champions, I think, was saying that until you get to a certain level, you won't get drug tested. Then drug testing is random, as it is in most sports. But then if you start to place and you're in kind of the medal categories, then you definitely do get tested. So he was saying...
I don't think this is every league.
That was the WAF one that he was talking about.
Okay, maybe that is a clean one in that case.
But if we were reading the comments from this guy on YouTube, that he was going into the stats and pointing out the fact that it's a heavily doped up sport, no one in the comments was like, bro, you can't say that. We're all natural, 100% natty.
Yeah, there isn't that obsession with claiming natty status the bodybuilding community seems to have.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of just kind of, we accept this. And some of his videos, he was saying, well, there are leagues that will claim to be natural, and maybe that's fine. You just go, if you aren't here for the spectacle of looking at roided up freaks, then you can go in one of the natural leagues. But there's also some entertainment value in looking at these human monstrosities.
They're not even human, man. They're inhuman monstrosities. They really are. It just shouldn't be possible.
So it's not all about size and strength, but certainly it helps. And these guys are going to take every advantage they can to get that, especially if competitions are now coming with some level of prize money and fame or infamy, right?
Definitely. I think they still very much do it for the joy of it rather than any prize money or anything like that. Levan freely admits to using at least SARMs, which is some kind of experimental equivalent of steroids. I think it makes you more susceptible to testosterone or something like that, which is effectively the same thing as pumping yourself full of testosterone anyway. So, I mean, they're not really hiding it.
If it helps the commercial viability of the sport, they're not saying don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Although some of the, well, at least one of these leagues has an anti-doping policy, this guy was saying that there, even around corruption and cheating in those, it's fairly questionable. So they would publish stats on the number of athletes from a country that had been randomly tested and found positive, but they might not bar them, and they wouldn't tell you which athletes it was that tested. It's like, oh, we found these 3 Georgians doped up, but there's 15 in the competition.
We only tested 3.
Yeah, all 3. And that they wouldn't necessarily disbar them from competitions or tell them that they've been tested positive at the time. It might be 2 years later that they go to the competitor and go, caught you dope in there 2 years ago.
What do you think about that?
What are you going to do about it?
That's right. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. What's interesting about this is we've just said how to be at the top level. It seems that you must be pumping yourself full of this shit. So John Brzenk, the greatest of all time, you can discuss more about why that's not really up for debate. He allegedly didn't use steroids at all. He didn't use anything until his 40s, where I think he started taking testosterone replacement therapy, which is fairly mild. And I think a lot of men in their 40s and 50s do that anyway. But he maintains he never did steroids. It was just literally naturally awesome.
Okay.
But he's the exception. But he's the exception in pretty much every possible way.
So you seem to have a hard-on for this guy. Tell me more.
Definitely. So he started, his father, John Brzenk Sr., was an arm wrestler. So he got into it from a young age in the classroom, which seems to be how this all begins for everyone. I'll paraphrase this entire history, but he started entering tournaments and winning them when he was from 18 onwards on the left hand and the right hand in multiple weight categories. So one of the first ones he entered, his dad entered the middleweight category, and John Jr. entered both the lightweights and the heavyweights, and he crushed them both on both arms. He continued in that fashion. So it's one thing to be at the top and winning tournaments. It's another to be able to do it on both arms. It's a whole other thing to be able to do it in multiple weight categories. You know, taking on guys.
How can you compete in multiple weight categories? Doesn't it have a limit or something?
Yeah, like it's an upper limit.
Oh.
So to be a lightweight, you can't weigh more than whatever it is, 55 or something like that. And then midweight, 75, and heavyweight's 85. So he was obviously weighing 54 or something. And they're also competing against guys 85 plus and still wrecking them and sending them home. So it's unbelievable. And he had about 25 years of pretty much uncontested dominance. I think between something like 1982 to 2015, he only suffered a single supermatch loss. So a supermatch is a one-on-one best of 5. He lost one between 1982 and 2015. That's 33 years. That's ridiculous. That's the sporting feat greater than pretty much any other sport that I'm sure there are others, but you know, that's unbelievable.
Okay. You've briefly just mentioned it was a best out of 5. Is that commonly how they're judged, or is it a one and done, or is it best of 3? Rules and techniques. Me.
I'm probably going to get this wrong. If there's any arm wrestling fanatics listening, I'm sorry. But my understanding is there are tournaments where it is one and done. You have one match against the other guy. You beat them, you go through to the next one. You beat them, you go to the next one. You lose, you're out. And there's also super matches, which are one-on-one. You only have one opponent, and it's kind of, they pick the top people and put them together, and then in which case there might be a best of 5 then. You might lose the first 2, but then win the next 3, and then you win the super match.
Okay. And you also mentioned that there's different techniques other than getting in someone's head or just being roided up to the max and trying to pin your hand on top. There's a couple of specific strategies.
I'm getting beginning to get out of my depth here. So there's a hook, which is a sort of low wrist position, which can be quite defensive. And then there's a flop press. I think it's just things you'd use at different times. The flop press hook, I think, is more wrist and bicep, and a flop press is more shoulder and tricep. So depending how you move around, you can use different parts of your arm muscles. And I was looking up what makes John Brzenk so good, because his dominance is pretty much, he's 65 now and he still competes at an elite level. He's no longer the best in the world, but he's 65, had 30 years of uncontested dominance, which is madness. So one of the things that people said that made him so good is he has excellent technique all round, and he can switch styles and stances depending on what his opponent's vulnerable to or trying to do and things like that. You know, and probably has very strong tendons, a physical job, a family history of doing it, started early. But basically, there isn't really one obvious thing that makes him stand out as why he was so much better than everyone else. I mean, he's a very unassuming looking guy. He just looks like some polo shirt wearing nerd with glasses, certainly in the early years. He's just folding up people. But there wasn't really an obvious reason why he was so amazing.
Hmm.
And you've got, this kind of leads us into, I feel a bit disrespectful talking about the freaks of arm wrestling, but so many people are. So in the 70s, there was a guy called Clive Dean, who was a giant of a man. He weighed 230 odd kilos, was 6'7". He was a hog farmer, and he was the dominant force for a while.
Could he fit a whole hog in his hand? That's how he got so good. I can pick up a hog, a whole hog, with one hand over the top and crush it.
The photos of him are absurd. He looks like he's standing really close to the camera and other people are standing far away, but he's just a monster of a man. His star was fading as John Brzenk's was rising, and I think he retired early. A lot of these guys just die in or have health complications, presumably from being filled with roids. I don't think Clive Dean was. I think he was just a good, honest freak of nature.
The one that you said is on top of the world right now, he's a massive bloke because of all this pumping and stuff, right?
Levan, I think he's 6'2" anyway, so he's not a small guy, and he is pumped full of this stuff, yeah.
And there's a guy who just happens to have unnaturally huge hands, so he kind of dominates in these kind of things as well.
The guy with the biggest hands is called Jeff Dabe, and he has some absolute hams. They're like the size of bin lids. He makes Devin the Rat's hands look small. I think big hands seems to be an advantage in this. But Jeff Dabe never trained. He had huge forearms as well. Just, yeah, another good, honest freak of nature. He never bothered training and still competed at a pretty high level. And yeah, anyone listening, you should look up Jeff Dabe just to look at these massive bin crushers he's got into his arm. They're staggering.
When we say they don't train, I wonder if they, you know, if they are thinking about, I'm going to move my arm in this position, or I'm going to pull them this way, or I want them to grab my thumb first, all this kind of stuff that I've skimmed over that makes it sound like I know what I'm talking about, which I absolutely don't.
He probably still uses technique and things like that, but he's an example of a guy that's just naturally big and strong and suited to this, and could get quite far just by just being strong and having massive hands. Didn't ever have to, you know, go to the gym and work on his wrist strength or anything like that, because he just had it anyway.
Okay.
So another notable freak, Oleg Jok, is a Ukrainian bloke with some kind of hyper growth in his left forearm.
Oh, I know the one you mean. He's like a young looking guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's the one also that looks like Morty from that Rick and Morty episode. He's got one giant.
Definitely has armathy and this like fucking monster forearm. And in one match, I think they had to restart it, and the ref's like hanging onto it with both hands, trying to like get him to stop. And it's like, the size of that thing is unbelievable. I think Oleg Jok is a champion in certainly the lighter weight divisions.
If you want to picture it for yourself when you're not familiar with Rick and Morty, it's like, imagine you were standing up as a normal human being, and instead of an arm, you replaced it with two sofa cushions sewn together on the side of your body. It's like that kind of proportion.
And there's another guy, Matthias Schlitt, that has the same thing, but I don't think he ever made it as far as Oleg Jok did. So we can't talk about freaks of arm wrestling without mentioning Denis Soplenkov, who was biggest, figuratively and literally, in around 2018, I think. He's this Russian man mountain.
The mountain from Game of Thrones. He's huge, though. That's the one that like doubled his weight, right?
No, that was Levan. Denis would have done something similar, because he started out life as a fairly normal-looking, albeit muscular, dude, and just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And he's an inhuman monster as well. And some of his feats of strength are ridiculous. There's a video of him crushing walnuts between his finger and thumb, like they're ping
grapes.
Pong balls. Yeah, they're grapes. Or he does this thing where he puts one on the table and like loads up his finger and slaps his finger onto it and just flattens it into dust. And there's another one of him literally breaking metal chains. He's wearing flip-flops and shorts. He just stands on the chain and pretty much bicep curls it up until it breaks. It's like, this guy is not human, an absolute monster.
That is ridiculous. And I don't think if you see these guys and these kind of things that are happening, you can ever make the claim that it's a completely natural sport, when that's just how humans are made sometimes.
I mean, he was going to be a strong guy anyway, but he had to be on the juice. There's just no way. And no one was beating him in 2018. And I think he beat Devin Larasse in quite a well-known match. But Denis, unfortunately, I think he had some kind of blood vessel rupturing in his liver. I can't remember what the medical term for that is. And that laid him out for a bit. And he's still strong as hell, but he's not back to prime Denis Soplenkov. And that was probably a result of various substances coursing through his body.
Are you saying it's not good for you?
I'm saying at extreme levels, it's not good for you. And people keep asking the question, how long can Levan keep this up? You know, because it's interesting the effects that a lot of steroid usage has on people, because I think it tends to make people's hands bigger anyway. It makes different parts of your face grow at strange rates, I believe. I'm not a steroid expert here, but and tends to make your hair disappear and all that muscle mass that has to be carried around your heart is under a lot of strain. And yeah, it's not, depends what your priorities are. If your priority is being healthy and living a long life, maybe don't put on 80 kilos of muscle in 3 years. Maybe. If your priority is crumping people in arm wrestling tournaments, then yeah, go for it, man. It's maybe the price of greatness.
So maybe if we circle back around to where we started and mentioned, is it a sport? Is it a subculture? We can fairly safely say that it can be both, because while it is a growing sport, as I said, it's now in its golden age, maybe, how accessible it is to other people. In a sporting sense, there's definitely more elements to it than I would have thought when I started looking at it, making their, you know, culture within a culture of arm wrestling, natural, not natural, what technique do you follow, what's your background and how did you get into it, and these kind of things. Guys that have been bred for it in some of the Eastern European countries where they maybe started in weight training, but it's now something they funnel people through in an institutional sense as well.
Mm-hmm.
Versus guys that just found out about it from hanging out and drinking beers and hearing that in an underpass you can fold someone over for fun.
It's definitely gathering pace as a sport, I think. And I'll happily watch more.
I have a feeling that you will today in about half an hour.
I'm going to ask the question that I'm going to ask in every one of these episodes that we do. Is it sexual?
Is it sexual?
It's an important question to ask. So we've only talked about the men doing it, because women do it too.
Yep. That's also fine. I'm just still laughing at, is it sexual? People are going to be able to find anything sexual, but I would not say that there's any consistent underlying sexual theme in arm wrestling.
I would agree with that. Yeah, definitely not. Some perv somewhere, I'm sure, is jerking it to, the Georgian Hulk. But but by and large, it's well clear of that, I think. It's not really much question.
Is it macho? Sure. Is it abusively so? No, it seems to be kind of a supportive community. And I would certainly not say that it's sexual. And do normal people know about it, or is it making its way into popular culture? Sure. I mean, I guess most things that we'll cover, we'll find it has some roots there, or someone wouldn't be able. There's some prevalence just because of how easy it is to access information these days. But if there was a a Stallone film in the 80s, no matter how hard it flopped, then it's around. You can be aware of it.
His character in that is actually based on John Brzenk, they say. And he was involved in the... And several arm wrestlers of the day were actually involved in the filming of it. They filmed it the day after a real arm wrestling tournament, so they still had the people around and the tables and all this kind of stuff and that authentic atmosphere. I might watch the film at some point. Might have been a commercial flop. Well, maybe it was objectively bad, but...
I think it was more like, yeah, commercially and critically, probably.
Mm. On every possible metric.
you don't go to a Stallone film expecting, you know, critical acclaim and Oscars, though, do you?
No, I mean, he managed it with Rocky.
From someone who could struggle to say the word Oscar.
Rocky is an anomaly. I think this one felt like it probably was going to be the plot of Rocky, but just reskinned to be arm wrestling instead of boxing.
Are you saying that Rocky won an Oscar?
It might have done. I don't know. You can't expect me to know these things.
I am going to...
It's considered a good film, though.
I'm going to offer up my controversial, as always, opinion and say that Rocky and all of its subsequent films are garbage and I hate them. And my wife likes them.
I think they got steadily worse.
But I just cannot understand the appeal, especially to someone who doesn't like violent sports, or she doesn't. Like, no, but Rockies are great films. Like, no, they're not. They're not. This is one guy getting punched at the end of the film and it takes him 2 hours to get there.
Have you actually seen the first one?
I've seen all of them. This is the problem.
I haven't seen any of them.
I've seen them all. I've seen the one with Mr. T. I've seen the one with that dude who's not German, not Russian, playing
Dolph
a Russian
Lundgren.
Guy. Yes. Whose face seems to have melted since then.
Yeah. His film biography, he's been in some of the worst films ever made. Dolph Lundgren hasn't been in a good film other than Rocky. And some might say Rocky's not a good film. I'm led to believe it is a good film. But yeah, his filmography is terrible.
Sorry, I got riled up. I enjoyed The Expendables because it's a funny-ish take on action films, and he's in that.
And interestingly, I think it's one of The Expendables films that Levan Tsarkhanovsky has a brief cameo in, which is about as close to mainstream fame as an arm wrestler is going to get, I think.
Well, look at that. From my rambling about films, you managed to bring us back on track to how...
Circulus back to relevant waters.
How arm wrestlers, famous arm wrestlers, can maybe also be an other famous thing.
So we've talked a bit about the potential dangers of steroid usage, and we haven't really talked about, is that a dangerous thing to show people? Are these role models that we should be aspiring to? Is it dangerous to set these expectations for young, impressionable people watching? And there's also an element of, I don't know if you found any of this, but quite a few arm wrestlers have been promoting various health products with dubious scientific backing. And that's another ethical question as well. This could be the dark side of arm wrestling.
I don't know. If you take your recommendations for how you should live your life and what products you consume from massive junkied up dudes or ladies on the internet, then possibly your judgment needs to be questioned. There's always going to be someone pushing a product, and there's always going to be people in a sports, cool English bro, in sports that are willing to take the payout to push a product that is garbage. So they're probably not really any worse than any other industry for that, right?
Right, probably. I mean, it's not like they're getting sponsorships from Nike and they got to put food on the table. They've got to put 500 grams of protein on the table every day.
Yeah.
And that TRT doesn't pay for itself, so...
Should people be looking up to them, though, is your other question. Should they be so widely available for young people to model themselves?
Yeah, is it dangerous? I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Just because someone's famous doesn't automatically make them a role model. I don't know. I also think the guys at the top level who get the most attention are so far beyond what a normal human could possibly achieve that it's almost, I think in many ways, almost doesn't matter if you idolize them because you're not going to get anywhere near them. So
it's not an exclusive to arm wrestling thing, though. If we look at pop stars, film stars, any kind of athlete, there's going to be ones that you should never take them as your role model just because they are trash of humans.
Shit people, drug habits, etc.
Nasty, vindictive. Yeah. You know, all of these are more harmful than saying, I want to be as big as that guy with his forearms like tree trunks.
Yeah, at least you're only harming yourself and forearms of the people that you snap them off. Devin Lorette said he's broken more arms than he can count.
Yeah, but he also has the capacity to count up to 8. So,
I think he's yeah, smarter than
that. I didn't mean it. Please don't come to my house.
So sorry, Devin, we like you. His children are into arm wrestling. His wife's into arm wrestling. They're all into it. His son is called Auden Lorette, and he's on his way, I think, to becoming impressive in his own right. But there's a video of him shilling these stem cell therapies and, injecting stem cells into their forearms and other shit that, he's like 16. He shouldn't be. Come on, Devin, what are you doing? Letting your kid inject this crap. There's no, I looked this up. There's no FDA approved stem cell treatment for muscle and bone or orthopedic stem cells, I think they're called. Doesn't mean it doesn't work, but it also kind of does. If it did, the FDA would have something approved. At the very least, it's poorly researched.
Maybe just don't tell people to go and buy things and inject them is a fairly good rule, unless you're a medical professional.
Mm. Interestingly, they're also sponsored sometimes by this stem cell company. So one could say maybe there's a conflict of interest there. One of my favorite arm wrestlers, what was his name? Alexander something or other. But he's known as Schoolboy because his videos came to prominence titled, Can You Beat This Russian Schoolboy Arm Wrestling? And he looks like, kind of a John Brezenk character, an unassuming polo shirt wearing bespectacled little nerd, except he's not little, he's like 6'2". But he's not like super ripped. He's just quite big. He's just got a big frame. And anyway, these videos, turns out you can't beat a Russian schoolboy arm wrestling. And that kind of, a lot of them have these nicknames. It's like No Limits Lorette and the Georgian Hulk and the Vampire. I can't remember the other ones, but this Alexander, he's become known as Schoolboy.
The Beast. I've seen The Beast. Yeah.
Schoolboy! 86 kilograms on the left hand.
You're into this. You can see.
I love it. My favorite Schoolboy joke is, as he's grown up, because we've kind of watched in turn from a teenager into an early 20s guy, and he's just getting better and better in arm wrestling. People are calling him School Bus now. Schoolboy has become School Bus. You've been hit by a school bus.
That's his natural evolution. If you were a Pokemon, he'd be reaching the next stage. Exactly. Your Schoolboy has evolved into School Bus.
His final stage is probably school shooting or something.
School House. I enjoy that, to see an arm wrestler be sent out as a Pokemon. Just rip this furry creature in half.
They're, what are they? Geodudes. That's what they all look like.
Well, they had skinny arms.
Oh, did they? I thought they had giant
some of the
arms
other ones. Okay, listen.
No, neckle
this is
body.
Not a Pokemon podcast. I'm ending this now. I should probably also
shut it down. Shut it down.
Hit the button. I should probably just put a big old caveat in as well, because when you've been saying Devin, whatever his fucking name is, it sounds like to me that you're saying Lorette, like Devin the Rat, as in he is a person who is also a rat. But you're not. You're saying his surname.
It's French Canadian. Lorette.
Yeah. Lorette?
No, Lorette. Lorette, like a lasso, which is a good, honest, blue collar name.
But he is in no way a rodent, just to clarify.
Definitely not. I think that's pretty much all I have to say about arm wrestling. I feel like we haven't covered the women's side of it as much as we should have done, perhaps. It's, I don't think as popular as the men's side, but there are plenty of formidable female arm wrestlers and they compete in the same leagues and things like that. Not against the men. But
sometimes they do.
There's
In the sort of more amateur leagues, there are definitely ladies that were pushing it that they do compete with the men and they want at least a mixed league to be established. Yeah.
That seems like a bad idea.
I wouldn't say that anything that we've said about the men doesn't apply to the women. They can be taking hormones and
pretty much, and, yeah. I think they are at the top level. Yeah. There's a Swedish lady, Sarah Backman, who has been folding people left and right for certainly the last 10 years. I don't know if she's the champion at the moment, but she's certainly a powerhouse. There's videos of her crumping men at strength expos and things like that. I think just like random bystander men rather than arm wrestlers themselves. But yeah, that would be, I don't know if I'd be into that. Is it sexual?
I don't know. Bringing it back around.
I can always make it that way.
The question is less, is it sexual and can I make it sexual?
One more comment I wanted to make was, I think there's a separate, you're saying it's a positive culture. I think there's kind of two parts to this arm wrestling culture. There's the people that actually compete in it, who have their, you know, their respectful conduct and all this kind of stuff. And then there's people like me that just watch it and kind of operate in the periphery of it and on forums and Reddit and that kind of stuff. And I think these kind of people like me really prop it up, but the people that compete in it are obviously the beating heart of it. But the commenters, they tend to not be as respectful as one would hope. And they tend to, they're like any kind of fanboy, really. They're obsessed, mostly obsessed with Devin at the moment, because he's the closest thing to a white American, like the commenters they are. And there's this sort of idolization that goes on and all kinds of coping when he loses a match and things like that. It's, I don't think, does anyone any favors.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying it's a positive culture. I read that it was a positive and supportive community culture. It might not be. I mean, I don't want to go into one of these guys' garage, and find out. You know, they can slap each other on the back and maybe have a little kiss over the table if they want. That's all fine. But shitposting on the internet is going to be a part of any community's videos as soon as it exists, I think. So
as soon as it exists on the internet, which is pretty much everything now, isn't it? Conclusions. Have you learned something?
I've definitely learned about arm wrestling, and I think this was a kind of interesting look into a fairly niche sport and the culture that goes along with it.
I think that's what we can aspire to, right? Kind of interesting.
I don't think that...
Yeah, keep listening,
folks. I don't
think
there's any hard and fast conclusion needed. It has more depth than you might think. It's not just a barroom brawling scene, but maybe you're now a little bit more informed about it from listening to this, and I'm a little bit more informed from yelling about it for an hour. Let's say goodbye for now to the topic of arm wrestling.
It's goodbye from me, Joe.
Did you just say goodbye to yourself?
From me.
From me.
It's goodbye from me. Good night.
Thank you for your goodbye, Joe. I'm also saying goodbye to and from myself. Thanks for listening to the Subculture podcast.
See you next time.
If you enjoyed today's episode, why not check out some other alternative content from some of our friends?
Welcome to the That's Effin' Weird podcast, where we cover anything weird.
A month later, her foot was found in a retention pond 150 miles away.
Unsettling.
He reinstates a bounty system that was used during the French and Indian War, which is a scalp bounty. So basically, you get paid $134 if you bring back an enemy Native American scalp.
Informative.
The costume that they used for that Bigfoot episode was the same costume in a Harry and the Hendersons.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Wow. And sometimes funny.
Digging their claws into me would be something that would, I don't know if I could, I think it would hurt. I mean, obviously it would hurt, but I don't know.
This is for survival, though. You got time to think about the pain afterward.
True.
I mean, you're fighting for your life here, like, yeah, it hurts when I'm just, you know, trying to eat my breakfast and the cat scratches me.
If there's anything you guys want us to cover, be sure to leave us a comment or hit us up in our Discord. But just remember, we don't want stuff that's normal. We want stuff that's effing weird.